This is the Rona Roundtable with Rick Rao,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Stewart in front of the faceoff point to Matthew Perreault. He shoots and scores! Oh, it's been a long time coming. First goal of the regular season for Matthew Perreault. Zubras took a puck up high, picked up though by Frolik across the line. Let a shot go. Stopped in front. Rebound. They score! Mark Scheifele over the shoulder of Schneider. And the Jets have scored twice in the second and lead it 2-0. Zidlinski put it right on the stick, though, of Lowry. Steals it in center. Back inside the devil's zone. Squeezed off a shot. Stop. Rebound in front. Rolling. Scores! And you can get on your feet here tonight. The Jets have come home to break a two-game losing skid with a 3-1 victory over the New Jersey Devils here tonight to start the homestand.
And with that, the Winnipeg Jets conclude 20 games on the season, and they are the first in the Central Division to hit the 20-game mark. Everybody else is behind them. A couple of teams in the West have hit it. Anaheim, Calgary, San Jose is the front runner right now. And in the East, nobody in the Metropolitan Division has gotten there. Meanwhile, Montreal, Tampa Bay, Boston, and Buffalo have all hit the quarter mark. In fact, we won't see all the teams hit the quarter mark until this coming Monday, I believe. We have to get through the weekend, Monday, Tuesday, before we get an idea of where everybody stands on the 20-game snapshot. But the Winnipeg Jets pick up the win last night, as you heard off the top. Matthew Perreault with his first goal as a Jet, his first of the season. Mark Scheifele with his third. And then Michael Frolik, who had a goal and an assist on the night. And Adam Lowry picked up an assist on that goal, 3-1, as the Winnipeg Jets beat the New Jersey Devils. The Devils team, quite frankly, in the first two periods of that hockey game were awful. And not to take anything away from the Winnipeg Jets, who played a good game last night. But the Devils had four shots on net. Poor Michael Hutchinson. What's he up to? Trying to keep his concentration. Four shots from the Devils in the first. Five in the second on Michael Hutchinson. In fact, I averaged out the New Jersey Devils last night were averaging one shot on goal for every 30 minutes or for every 5 minutes in the first half of the game. Now, they picked it up a little bit with 11 in the third period, and that's when they got one of the goals, a squeaker, the only goal, actually, on Michael Hutchinson, who had a pretty good game last night. In fact, made 21 saves in that 3-1 win over the Devils. He saw action in, what, two games in October? And now he's played four this month. He started three of them, but he's played in four, and he's put up a record of 3-0-1. He's allowed no more than one goal in each game, meaning in the month of November, Michael Hutchinson has a goals against average of 0.81. It's the lowest in the NHL among any of the goaltenders who have played at least three games in the month of November. Now, take all the goaltenders, no matter how many games they've played, bring up NHL.com, put it in the stats leaders, and there he is, Michael Hutchinson, leading not only in the month of November, but this season as well, leading in goals against average at 1.38, save percentage 9.48. Six games played, four starts, record of 3-1-1. Do you ride the hot goalie? Ooh, now we're getting into something, aren't we? Do you ride the hot goalie or no? Or do you come back with Andre Pavlik, who hasn't been bad? He's been good. He's been very good at times. But Michael Hutchinson's also been very good. And Hutchinson, Maurice was asked about Hutchinson's performance last night.
Well, I liked it because it was a very difficult game for him. I mean, we give up nine shots through two periods. You know at some point it's coming, and then he looked... and then to give one up that he'd probably like to have back to make it 2-1. So now the complexion of the game's completely changed, but he didn't, right? So he made some saves in that stretch, and there were two or three that went to the net that didn't come back out. And that's everything at that point in the game. Get the whistle, reset, damage is contained. So that composure in the net was very good.
There's Pomo on his netminder, Michael Hutchinson, who, as I mentioned, just kind of gets some spot duty. And speaking of spot duty, Adam Party. A little party dangle last night. Hey, always love to see the party dangle. He gets into the lineup last night after missing, the last 13 games? He'd been out a while. And gets the opportunity. He played the night before as well, or the game before, I should say. So that's two now for Mr. Party, who gets back into the lineup last night and joined both Paul and Brian in the Exchange Lounge following. And normally the guys on a win especially are really good to hear from in the lounge. But Party, who hasn't been in the lineup a lot here, kind of got into that whole mindset. We talk about Hutchinson trying to keep his concentration, A, because he doesn't see that much ice when he does get in. He hasn't been in perhaps in a little while, but also during the course of a game, not getting that many shots, hard to find a rhythm. Well, here's Party on, just basically getting into the lineup.
Oh, that's a tough one. Mentally, you start to not lose it, but, you start to think like, I'm just a rental player. I'm just a fill-in guy. It's a tough thing to deal with over and over again. Once it happens, it's probably happened to every hockey player. But for me, it seems to happen over and over again. But I mean, it's a mental thing. You got to look at this game as it's what you do and it's how you play. And I've been sitting there watching these guys go out and go on a run, and you watch the intensity that they're bringing to the rink, their compete level, and you know that the day's going to come someday where I'm going to have to go in there and play. There's going to be an injury, or there's going to be, a guy get sick. You can't play. It's last minute. So you always have to be ready that way. It's just in your head. Trust your instincts that you can play. I know it can play. I believe I should be in there every night. But that's coach's decision. And, my job is to make sure that I'm ready to go for these guys. When the time calls, yes, the other day on Sunday, no morning skate. I didn't know until 2 o'clock that I was actually going in and playing. So not a lot of time to prepare, but I mean, that's a good thing too, because you don't put a lot of pressure on yourself and you just kind of roll with it. I just went out and tried to have fun with it and just try to keep my compete level up to where everybody's been going in the last couple of weeks here.
Some real honest conversation with Adam Party. Not that the other conversations aren't honest, but just a little more to this, and some real, you could get some emotion behind it about, the day in, day out battle of just being in the lineup.
Well, I hope they do, trust me, or else what am I doing here? But like I said, I believe in my abilities more than anybody. So, I mean, I trust myself, and I think, Charlie's got a lot of trust in me too. To play me in defensive situations, it's good to have this depth we have. I believe we have seven really good D-men that can play in any type of situation. So it's really good for our hockey club. And like I said, the toughest thing for me mentally was just trying to get to that level that, our team's been playing at. And reasons why we've won games in the last few weeks and the reason why we got on this run is, it's our intensity and our compete level that's in our game right now.
The compete level's been good. The goals against average, very good. Defense, very good. Scoring, well, it's starting to come here in that the lines have been shuffled around the last couple of games, and they get three again last night, and three of those goals even strength goals as well. So that monkey off the back, if you will, is starting to depart. The power play, well, that's having a little bit of trouble. They were 0 for 3 last night. Now they're 0 for 21 if you go back to that goal by Toby Enstrom in Ottawa, and they scored on their first of two power plays that day. But they've been 0 for since, 0 for 21, and Paul Maurice joked about it last night. The trending of the team right now, as mentioned, they're at the 20-game mark. They're actually 3 points better than they were this time last year at the 20-game mark. Now, they're not going to catch St. Louis and Nashville in this period, and they've got Chicago that's 2 points back and Minnesota's 3 back. The problem there is Chicago's got 2 in hand and Minnesota's got 3. And if you operate on the fact, Minnesota's won 3 in a row here. They're 6-4 in their past 10. Chicago's playing 500 hockey here over the last 10. But to try and figure out who they've got next, Chicago's at Calgary tonight, and then they're at Edmonton on Saturday. They've got Vancouver and Colorado coming up. Minnesota, a little bit easier. They're in Philly and then Tampa Bay and Florida, their next 3. But as they are trending, if you use their winning percentages, Chicago will actually slip ahead of Winnipeg at the 20-game mark, maybe just by a point. And Minnesota's probably going to catch them as well. So the Jets will drop probably down to 5th, would be the estimation. And again, see how Chicago and Minnesota make out here. They currently sit 3rd in the Central. May very easily fall back to 5th. And right now are trending probably... And we'll have to wait till these other teams hit the 20-game mark, but they may be just a point out of the playoff picture, the way it's trending right now at the 20-game mark. A lot better than they were last season, and right in the mix for a possible playoff spot again at the quarterway mark. We'll touch on more of that as we come. Of course, Toronto got absolutely blasted last night on home ice. We'll hear from a couple of callers, actually, that were quite entertaining. We'll view in on that or listen in on that. Rob Longley of the Toronto Sun, front page of the Sun. Did someone say puke? We'll talk to Rob about that game last night for the, by the way, the Predators. 15 different players got at least a point last night. Who didn't? Ole Jokinen, James Neal, and Anton Volchenkov. Eric McRomel is going to join us. The latest on Adrian Peterson as the NFLPA and the NFL square off. Shane Naughty drops by with his NHL notes at noon. Craig Custance of ESPN.com. And, well, because Mr. Muni, Craig Muni, was going to join us, but he's had something come up, so we'll talk to him on Friday. Craig Custance will join us from ESPN.com. And when we come back, Robin Short of the St. John's Telegram, the Ice Caps last night, winning over the Toronto Marlies. Nothing going right for anything Toronto. 2-0, Ice Caps win it, and it's Connor Hellebuck with his first pro shutout last night. We'll talk to Robin about that when we come back. It's the Roto Roundtable here on a Wednesday on the home of the Winnipeg Jets. This is TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Rona Roundtable with Rick Ralph Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
It's The Rona Roundtable here on a Wednesday on the home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. Craig Custance of ESPN.com coming up this hour. Eric McRomel at the top of the hour. Shane Naughty drops by with his NHL news and notes. And Rob Longley from the Toronto Sun on what happened to those Toronto Maple Leafs last night on home ice. They lose to Buffalo in Buffalo and then get trounced by the Predators 9-2 last night. Good news, though, for the Winnipeg Jets. Beat the Devils by a score of 3-1. And with the Ice Caps, winners as well. More misery for Toronto. The Marlies lose by a score of 2-0. And the netminder, Connor Hellebuck, with a big smile on his face. And joining us to touch on it, Robin Short covers the team for the St. John's Telegram. We welcome him back to the program. How are you doing down there?
How about Rick? How's it going with you?
It's going well. We were buzzing about Michael Hutchinson last night. I mean, he's got some unbelievable numbers right now in limited action. We were going to ask you, are the Ice Caps missing Michael Hutchinson? And lo and behold, Connor Hellebuck flashing some leather last night.
Yeah, Hellebuck playing pretty good. Last night, I mean, he only faced 23 shots. I mean, the Marlies didn't exactly beat down the door. More impressive, actually, was a loss to the Hamilton Bulldogs last weekend. They lost in overtime, and Hellebuck made 40 saves. He played outstanding in that game. Not saying he didn't play well last night, but he's after putting back back-to-back real good efforts, and that's got to be a good sign for the Ice Caps. Last night was his fourth start in a row, and you can see he's starting to feel a little more comfortable. He's getting his feet wet, and it just shows in his play.
Robin, as you know, two wins here in regulation in their past 10 games. It's been a tough sledding for the Ice Caps, yet having said that, they're 2 points out of second in the division.
Exactly. and believe me, that's something that the Ice Caps coaching staff points out, you know, when you start talking about the, we're not that far out. And I guess they're not, but, you know, I guess if it, let's put it this way, if you're a glasses half full type of individual, that's the take you have on it. At the same time, I suppose the Ice Caps, they've played, you know, two and some cases three more games than the other teams in the East. I think if you look at numbers, what's concerning with the Ice Caps right now are the 65 goals that they've allowed, and that's far and away the most in the Eastern Conference. And that wasn't supposed to be a concern this year. Going into the season, there was no big concerns with the goaltending. You had Hellebuck coming in, and of course Peter Budaj, and the defense was, for all intents and purposes, the same as last year. Zach Redmond spent most of last season in Winnipeg, and of course Josh Morrissey didn't come on board until his junior season was done. So it was pretty much the same defense. So keeping the puck out of the net wasn't a big concern. What was supposedly a concern was who's going to do the scoring. Well, that hasn't been much of a concern. They've got 43 goals. That puts them in, you know, amongst the teams in the East. But keeping the puck out of their net, that's been a problem. But with the emergence of Hellebuck, certainly in these past couple of games, then maybe that's being addressed.
Robin, goal scoring has been the topic kind of up here with the parent club. Goaltending has not been the issue, and defense has been strong, but even strength goaltending. Now, having said that, the last couple of games they've been able to find the back of the net. How has it been this year for the Ice Caps?
Well, it's been scoring by committee. I mean, there's nobody who you'd say is, you know, on a tear. Eric O'Dell, I guess, had a little bit of a streak going, but he's tailed off a little bit. But nonetheless, he's averaging almost a point a game, as is John Albert. A real surprise, actually, is a chap by the name of Chase Ballasy. Ballasy was signed to a PTO, professional tryout, and he's actually leading the team in scoring. That's not something that you hear every day about a guy's on a PTO that's leading the team. And I don't know if that's an indictment for the rest of the Ice Caps. There's two ways of looking at that one, I suppose.
Well, let's look at it with the glass half full, Robin, because you mentioned here's a guy that with a professional tryout. He gets signed to an AHL contract.
Yep.
And now is, I don't want to say tearing it up, but he's definitely leading the way for the Ice Caps. I mean,
hey, listen, five goals, 14 points in 15 games. You know, I mean, he's playing over and above what most people had expected. You know, he's had his moments on the defensive side of things, but, you know, tell me a rookie who hasn't.
Sure. I mean, drafted by Nashville, not signed.
Yep.
And so now the Jets have him under an AHL contract. But
yep.
How would you characterize his game so far here? You mentioned as being a rookie.
He's one of these guys. You know, these players that are out there and you don't notice them until the puck is in the net, and then you say, where did this guy come from? And that's he's kind of not invisible on the ice. But you don't really notice him until he makes something happen. He's got great speed. He gets involved. He's not one of these guys who plays on the periphery. He gets involved. He's looking for the puck. He's not afraid to go into the corner. He gets his nose dirty. He's turned out to be quite a find, actually, for the Ice Caps.
Robin Short of St. John's Telegram joining us here on TSN 1290, touching on the Ice Caps and their season thus far. Defense on the defensive end. How's this club looking as far as some of the, well, let's not even on the defensive end, just the team in general, some of the younger guys and how they're managing this season in their first full year or even second year of pro hockey now?
JC Lipon, I was actually speaking with Lipon this morning after practice. He's had his moments. He's only got a goal in 17 games. You know, but I don't, not that JC Lipon will ever be mistaken for Guy Lafleur. I mean, he's a guy who's going to be no more than the third or fourth line player in the National Hockey League if he reaches the NHL. But, you know, he's a guy who gets his nose dirty, gets under the corners, will drop the gloves every now and again. Just that role player. But nonetheless, he's got a goal in 17 games. Brendan Kitchen, another second year player. You know, I don't know if you can say he's kind of got the sophomore jinx. He's got two goals, six assists in 18 games. And Kitchen, if I remember, and, you know, Rick, the older I get, the worse I'm getting.
I hear you.
I think he was like Rookie of the Month or something this time last year or thereabouts. He had a great rookie season, but he's kind of, you know, I won't go so far as to say slumping, but let's put it this way, he's off to a slow start, okay? You know, but some of the other guys, Sherratt's playing well. Ben Sherratt's playing well. You know, I fully expect him to be a National Hockey League player at some point in time. But overall, I mean, none of the Ice Caps are really, you know, jumping off the page. Carl Klingberg, you know, he's the same Klingberg that we've seen. When he's hot, you know, there's very, very few players who are better. Problem is, with Klingberg, when he's cold, he's very, very cold, you know. And that's what we're seeing right now from Klingberg. He's not scoring a lot of goals.
I think last time we talked to you, it was all about, for the most part, Peter Budaj had just arrived down there. And,
yeah.
I mean, how's it going for him with Hellebuck getting the shutout last night? You mentioned he's got the last couple of starts.
Yeah, Peter who? It's been Hellebuck the past, as I mentioned, the past four games.
Right.
And shutout last night, and, you know, he goes in the books as a loss on Friday night against Hamilton, but again, played very well. 40 saves was just okay. He just, the thing with Hellebuck, he just looks so much more comfortable in goal right now, and he just has that confident way about him. And I think it's just a case of a kid coming out of college into the pros and feeling his way about, and the comfort level is just there right now. Not to say that Peter Budaj is not going to play. Of course he's going to play. And he, in fact, he might even get to start tonight in the rubber match against the Marlies.
Robin, always good to catch up, and always like to hear the progress of people that are coming through the pipeline. So all the best, and we'll talk to you again at some point here through the season.
Yeah, for sure. Rick, anytime. Good chatting with you.
We'll do. Robin Short, who covers the Ice Caps for the St. John's Telegram. We'll take the time out when we come back. Craig Custance of ESPN.com is going to join us. The Leafs, Matt Fratton has been placed on waivers. So you know there's some changes there. I think he only got into about a half a dozen games this season, no points. But believe, was he not part of the Bernier trade off the top of my head? I believe he was. I will take the time out. We're back with more here on the Rona Roundtable on the home of the Jets. This is TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Rona Roundtable with Rick Ralph Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
It's the Rona Roundtable here on a Wednesday on the home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. Red Wings in town tomorrow. Been playing some pretty good hockey as of late. They, well, lost to the Sharks, but threw 45 shots at goal. And we told you yesterday, the rookie for the Sharks picking up the shutout. And then last night, another win for the Red Wings. So a little tough opponent for the Winnipeg Jets coming up Thursday. And then, of course, on Sunday, St. Louis Blues rolling here until the Jets make their way to Columbus and then Buffalo, I believe it is. Hopefully the snow will have made its way into the ground by then. Yes, tough going there. Tough going for the New Jersey Devils, as witnessed last night. 3-1, Winnipeg Jets defeat them. And you wonder about Corey Schneider as he made his 19th straight start for the Devils last night. Joining us to touch on a number of different things from ESPN.com covering the National Hockey League, Craig Custance. We welcome him back to the program. How you doing, Craig?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
Doing well. Look, thanks for taking some time with us up here just north of the border. Mentioned the Devils last night. We saw Corey Schneider in goal. I mean, the Devils, four shots in the first, five in the second. I mean, there's not much Schneider can do unless he can score as well. But still in all, 19 straight starts. We were talking a lot about it yesterday. And there's Marty Brodeur that's just kind of still out there. Josh Harding goes through waivers. I'm not sure really what Lou's plan is there in New Jersey.
Well, you know, I mean, they've committed to Corey Schneider, and this is the opportunity he's been waiting for a long time to finally get. And I don't think you would want to pull the rug out from under him at this point. They came, I'm based out of Detroit, and they came through Detroit about a week ago, and Corey lost that game, and you could just, I mean, you could tell the frustration. He just, you know, and he'd been, you know, he said the same thing. He said, I've been waiting a long time. You know, this is a great opportunity for him, and it's not going the way he had planned it to go. But, you know, one of the things I asked him, I said, when was the last time you weren't looking over your shoulder after every bad start? And he couldn't even, he thought maybe the AHL, maybe in college. So it's a new experience for him, and clearly he's still working it out.
I don't know. Is it a good experience? I mean, we're in Winnipeg here with Hutchinson being so good as he is. I mean, Pavlik hasn't been bad either. It's a nice luxury the Jets have here, but you wonder sometimes who you should start in a certain circumstance. There's no question in New Jersey who you start, but he's just on such a torrid pace right now. I don't know that you want him to play every game this year.
Right. No, and on some level, you have to think that having Martin Brodeur or Roberto Luongo around pushed Corey Schneider, and it, you know, I'm sure it kept him laser focused at every opportunity he was getting. He knew he had to be good or else he was going to lose playing time to the veteran, or he was trying to earn playing time, and perhaps that was, you know, part of what made Corey Schneider so good. And so this is definitely an adjustment, and yeah, I think at some point you want to get at least some competition or some rest for Corey.
Speaking of Brodeur, I guess he was at the Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremony there in Toronto on Monday. I mean, he's not into the hall yet. At some point, I think he's just an absolute shoe-in, but I don't know that he's done playing as yet. Does he know? Does anybody know what's going on next?
Well, I mean, he doesn't want to be done playing. We caught him on the red carpet at Hall of Fame, and you know, he said he's still working out a few days a week, and he's enjoyed the time off. He said he's doing some traveling and spending some time with his family, but he said he still has the fire and he would come back as a backup. He said you know, whatever role that teams are willing to take him, he wants to play and he wants to be with the team. But the reality is, even if you do need a goalie, I mean, you mentioned Josh Harding goes through waivers. There's other options. If you're a team looking for a goalie, a 40-plus Marty Brodeur at this point, I'm not sure that's the direction you'd turn.
Craig, the Winnipeg Jets are the first team in the Central Division to hit the 20-game mark, and we're kind of waiting for everybody else to kind of catch up here. And when I say catch up, it's Chicago, really, that I think everybody in the division's waiting to see what's going to go on there with the Chicago Blackhawks. Mr. Richards honored the other night for the Blackhawks, and it's been, I don't know, it's been a mixed bag, I guess, of results here for the Blackhawks this season early on.
Yeah, we saw Stan Bowman yesterday at the GM meetings, and they're about to do their that crazy circus trip where they hit the road forever. And you know, we were kind of asked, I asked Stan to assess where the team was at right now. And one of the things he said is, you know, they're not scoring goals. And he thinks, he likes the way, essentially, the team is playing, and they're just not getting rewarded for it. And that happens sometimes. You know, scoring goals has rarely been an issue for this Blackhawks team. It's the same personnel. So, I mean, you just have to assume at some point the Blackhawks are going to get going and catch up. I mean, right now they're sitting in fourth place in the Central, which is crazy. But, of all the teams in the NHL that have gotten out to a lukewarm start, I have the least amount of concerns about the Blackhawks.
You mentioned scoring, and it hasn't been lukewarm for Nashville this season, in particular Philip Forsberg, who scored again, I believe, well, everybody scored last night against Toronto except Olli Jokinen, and what, James Neal didn't have anything either. 15 different guys get at least a point last night. I think 9 got at least 2. It was just something else. But Nashville's really on a roll here.
Yeah, no, they're good. Philip Forsberg, holy cow, what a trade that's turning out to be for the Predators. I actually wrote about that last week a little bit, and you know, talking to some people on really what went wrong there, and sometimes you just, you know, you get it wrong. They drafted him. The Capitals drafted him, brought him into one of their camps, and they saw a player who was timid. They were really worried about his foot speed. They thought he was slow, and kind of were wondering internally if they had made a mistake with him, and I got the impression that they were ready, you know, they wanted to move him before the rest of the league caught on that perhaps this guy wasn't as good as people thought he was. And as it turns out, I mean, we're seeing now that the Capitals were wrong there, and he's been a great fit. You know, David Poile spoke a little bit about on the red carpet about Forsberg and just said, you know, that adjustment time, the time in the AHL helped this guy. I mean, this is still a young player coming over from Sweden, and that transition time really helped him, and we're starting to see the fruits of that labor right now.
Had a chance to speak with Poile about a week ago, and you know, we brought up the trade to him. I mean, he requested Forsberg at the time, but he really takes the high road. It's not like he will say that, you know, oh, geez, we got the big part of the deal there, that he's, you know, this is what we asked for. You know, they had to move, make a move, or Washington was forced to make a move, and so that's what they did.
Well, I mean, there's a couple things at play. One, I think it speaks to the pressure that ownership was putting that regime under at that time. I mean, you had a Capitals team that maybe was in a little bit of a transition, and it probably would have been better served even maybe missing the playoffs and having a draft pick rather than trying to do whatever it takes to get in. But, you know, when you talk to people around the league, they'll say, boy, if we had known Forsberg was available, I mean, the price they could have gotten was higher than they got him, the guy in Marty Urat, whose best days were behind him. So that, to me, like, trading him is one thing, but when you think about the return they got, that to me is the bigger sin.
Craig Custance, ESPN.com, joining us here on TSN 1290. Talk of the World Cup coming back. It's been a while since we've seen that. I don't know that they want to replace the Olympics, do they? I mean, that conversation is yet to, I guess they still need more conversations on that. But it would be a compliment rather than replacement to the Olympic Games?
Well, I mean, it depends on who you ask. I'm sure the NHL, you know, owners would probably be more than happy to have it be a replacement. But I think ultimately they're trying to get this four-year schedule, international schedule, planned out a little bit so they can start planning for some of these events. And, I mean, by all accounts, this World Cup's a go. The interesting thing to me that came from this Toronto trip was talking to people in the format of this World Cup and how there may be, you know, you'll have 8 teams, 6 of them will be kind of the hockey powerhouses, and then now there's this talk of maybe the other 2 being all-star teams, a North American Young Stars team or whatever we're calling that, and then a team made up of European players that aren't on one of the 6 major powers. So that, to me, is the interesting debate, because I'm not sure I'm crazy about that.
Craig, finally, I just wanted to ask you about it's the Primetime Sports Management Conference that was recently held there. And Ryan Burke, of course, is there, and the hair back, and always kind of creates some excitement, doesn't he? But there was a little talk of analytics at it. Which I know you wrote about as well. And then Burke got into because it was right around the time of Phil Kessel and the get away from me comment, although he did speak last night after that 9-2 beating.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? Well, I was not there for Brian Burke's comments in the media. So I don't want to speak out of turn there. But I was there in the analytics session, and you know, the one thing that Brian doesn't get enough credit for, or people get lost. I mean, he's painted as this anti-analytics guy, and he's a guy that he's quick to point out that if he thought that there was something out there that would give him a huge advantage, he'd buy it right now. And he also says, you know, the Calgary Flames are doing a lot of analytics work right now. They've got a guy, Chris Snow, who's been in the organization a while, and he's also working with other people. I had a conversation with Brad Treliving afterwards, and we were just talking about some of the things the Flames are doing. So he's into it, but you know, sometimes he can't help himself when he gets that audience. Makes for a good time.
Pretty much all the teams, I would swear all the teams are into analytics, and not just this year, that they've been in it for a couple of years, maybe some more so than others, but it's become a fabric, but it's a bit of a tug and war, I think, with some.
Yeah, no, I think the most interesting thing that Brad Treliving said was, you know, there's still a little bit of a meshing of the old school and the new school, and what we're finding now is both sides, you know, sometimes he said there's ignorance on both sides. You have guys that think they're completely right on the analytics side. You have guys from the old scouting school who think they're completely right, when the reality is you need probably a little bit of all of it to put together the best possible team. And so it's kind of working those kinks out as we move forward that, you know, that teams are working on right now.
Craig, always good stuff. Appreciate you taking some time with us up here, and we'll catch up somewhere along the road.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Craig. Craig Custance of ESPN.com. We'll take the time out when we come back. Bombers with some news today as they re-signed defensive lineman Zach Anderson. Darren Bombing of TSN 1290 caught up with him. And it's the 10th year anniversary of the Pacers and Pistons getting together in Detroit. And boy, did things go wrong with that. We'll touch on it when we come back. It's the Rona Roundtable on the home of the Winnipeg Jets. This is TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Rona Roundtable with Rick Ralph Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Wednesday edition, Rona Roundtable here on the home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. And the Detroit Red Wings, of course, come to town tomorrow as the weather continues. Sub-temperatures, little wind, little blowing snow out there and around. Reminding everybody that winter is indeed here in the middle of November. Yay. Coats for Kids, though, needs your support. Please donate gently used winter wear. That includes coats, boots, mats. Give them a mat. Give them some mitts. That would be more helpful than standing on a mat in a blizzard. Hats and scarves, Rick, in all sizes. You can drop off any of these donations at any Perth's Dry Cleaners or Winnipeg Fire and Paramedic Services Hall today. More information is online if you need it, unitedwaywinnipeg.ca. And as mentioned, Detroit coming to town tomorrow. A little news from the Bombers as well. Re-signing defensive lineman Zach Anderson. Very pleased, as the Bombers said in there. Well, they're always pleased when they sign somebody, aren't they? All teams are pleased to announce when they sign. They don't regretfully sign somebody, do they? The Winnipeg Jets regretfully sign so-and-so. So the Winnipeg Blue Bombers pleased to announce that they have signed the pending free agent defensive lineman Zach Anderson, and TSN 1290's Darren Bombing caught up with him before, all the official announcements came out this morning.
This team was relying on you for starts for a good chunk of time. Would you like to be back?
I would. I love the Bomber organization. Been here for 2 years. You know, I love Wade and Kyle. They're some best guys you'd want to work for, and the coaches here is somewhere you want to be, definitely. And so that's the goal, is getting this knee healthy and proving that I belong here.
You joined this team during a really tough time, and since then they've changed everything in the organization. How have you seen that change and that progression, and maybe describe the culture that is here now?
I can't really speak to the business side of things, but as far as the locker room aspect, it's an overhaul. I mean, people are playing, I don't know, you don't want to say playing for paychecks as, last year. It was just kind of a downhill spiral last year, and it was more kind of a grind to go to work every day, where even though we went on a little losing streak, we knew we had it in us to come back and win every single game. And that's the attitude in the locker room, was just different. The attitude was winning. We want to win, even though we came up short a few times midseason there. Towards the end, we still came in every day knowing that we were going to win.
You see more stability, more maybe just a higher mentality of players in the room.
Yeah, I mean, you got it's just more experience this year too. I mean, I know last year we were really young, and this year we have a lot of experience in the room. It's a lot of leaders to look up to, and a lot of vets. So, you know, we know what we need to do in the off season, and you know, obviously it was professional football, so not everyone's going to be here next year as they were this year. But you know, I'm sure the right ones will stay.
There's Zach Anderson with TSN 1290's Darren Bombing. Anderson, 10 games this past season for the Bombers, and of course suffered the season-ending knee injury. Three sacks, 20 defensive tackles. As Darren mentioned, stormed onto the scene pretty much. Zach Anderson coming in at a difficult time, and he ended up starting 13 games. Second on the club with seven sacks, 29 tackles, two fumble recoveries, and a pass knockdown. Not too bad. The guy gets a two-year deal, and he was a pending free agent Zach Anderson back for a couple of years with the Bombers. Speaking of a couple of years, it's been 10 years since the Pacers and Pistons got together at the Palace. It became known as the Malice at the Palace, and here's why.
Ben Wallace was fouled, and Wallace did... Oh! Wallace, right at our chest! This has potential to be serious if they don't get between. Wallace upset. Players trying to hold each other off. Steven Jackson and Rasheed Wallace trying to be peacemakers. Now Jackson yelling. Wallace still going. You need the coaches in there to get him away. Jackson challenging Derek Coleman. Somebody should just get Jackson out of there. As if Wallace is ejected, I'm not sure. He'd have to walk past the Pacer bench to go. Now Artest has jumped over the scorer's table and is trying to get down to the bench. Artest is in the stands. Oh, this is awful. Fans are getting involved. Steven Jackson's in the fans. Rasheed Wallace going into the stands. The security trying to somehow restore order. Fans and players are going at it, and the players trying to help each other out.
This is a disgrace.
All the players now, they're jumping in there to try and get the other players out because the fans have come involved. Oh, what a sad scene here at the Palace. And now another fight's breaking out in front of the Pistons bench. It's a fan on the court. This is very, very dangerous. Fans are throwing cups with liquid in them now onto the court. Ron Artest has a look in his eye that's very scary right now. You wonder if the official's going to let this game continue. Now they're throwing bottles out onto the floor. They're trying to get the Pacers to go back to the locker room. The officials, I think they're going to call this game off, and that should be the outcome is definitely decided. You have these ridiculous fans trying to go at the players and now throwing.
Somebody could really get hurt. Luckily, nobody did get really hurt, but it changed the NBA and the way it does business forever. It was the Malice at the Palace 10 years ago today. Pistons fan John Green threw a beer at Ron Artest, who was laying there on the scorer's table after the hard foul under the basket, which originally started some on-court fisticuffs, spread to the side, the scorer's table. Artest is laying there, and this drink, this beer from John Green gets tossed at him, and off goes Ron Artest into the stands. Nine players from both of these teams were suspended for a total of 146 games. The Pacers absorbed pretty much the worst of it. Artest was tossed, I recall, for the rest of the season back in 04-05. Four others got big-time suspension. Steven Jackson, who was basically squaring off, trying to fight people on the court and then ended up in the stands, he got 30 games. Jermaine O'Neal got 25 games. The worst part of that for O'Neal was watching him try to leave the court. And they were trying to take Artest off the court and covering him, some security guards covering his head. And fans at the Palace just dumped and poured and threw beer and cups and bottles and everything they could get their hands on. It was a scary situation, quite frankly, at the Palace. Jermaine O'Neal got 25 games. They later reduced that to 15. Anthony Johnson got 5, and Reggie Miller just got 1. Basically standing around there, it looked loss. But it changed the way things would go for the NBA ever since. You can't buy a large beer at an NBA game at any time. Can't buy one. I remember going to Leaf games and Raptor games right after it was over, after the Malice at the Palace had taken place, and the NBA talked about it. There were people charged. I think 9 people ended up being charged with offenses. But the NBA decided that's it. So you could go to a hockey game, an NHL game, and you could pick a medium or a large beer. But if you went to an NBA game, nope. No large. Nothing. And today, I think you still can't get a large beer at an NBA game. And they've increased security, of course, around the court. Can't have fans on the court. Can't have fans on the court trying to fight players. But I remember this topic going 3, 4, 5 days on TV, on radio. It was a big deal. And perhaps the brawl of all brawls of the NBA to end any of that. You do not go into the stands in the NBA now. We'll take the time out. SportsCenter here at the top of the hour. When we come back, Eric McCormell is going to join us. The latest on Adrian Peterson, the NFLPA, and their fight with the National Football League. Shane Nanny drops by with his NHL news and notes just afternoon. Rob Longley of the Toronto Sun, as Randy Carlyle is speaking. Apparently Dave Nonis, the GM, is going to speak as well. So all that straight ahead on the Rona Roundtable here on the home of the Jets. This is TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Rona Roundtable with Rick Ralph Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Wednesday edition of the Rona Roundtable here on TSN 1290 is there's a little bit of blow and drifting snow. Not so much drifting, but blowing snow here in and around Winnipeg. Nothing like what they've got in Buffalo. In fact, the Buffalo Bills are looking for help. If you are going to be in that area, if you can get to that area, is a better question. They're looking for snow shovelers, and they're going to pay $10 an hour and give you tickets. The vice president of operations for the Bills says they can't have too many people. They won't be turning anybody away. They have to remove snow. And having snow at the same time, they're going to go 24/7. There's going to be triple shifts of people shoveling snow. The NFL is going to have to come up with a contingency plan if the stadium can't host this Sunday's game. And how much snow has to be removed from in and around the stadium? 220,000 tons. And that is enough to fill their stadium 8 times over, I believe. That's how much snow is in Buffalo. Yikes. So the NFL with a couple of things on its plate, if you will. One of those involving Adrian Peterson as well, from snow to being absolutely snowed by the National Football League, if you will. And joining us to touch on the latest here with AP from the Minnesota Vikings is TSN's legal analyst Eric McCormella. We welcome him back to the program. How are things?
Go help him. My hourly rate's too high for the shoveling. But, you know, here's the thing, though. I mean, this is not, snow is not a surprise in Buffalo. I guess maybe I'm missing why this is any different than any other snowfall.
Well, I think that it's the amount. I mean, I've seen them have problems down there before. I've seen pictures come out of Buffalo where the interstate's been absolutely shut down because cars can't move. They're stuck. There was a woman, apparently, in Buffalo yesterday. They got her out this morning, trapped in her car for 24 hours. She's driving, got the car stuck, and it continued to snow and buried the complete vehicle. So they have to usually go in with snow machines if they can even get those operating. And this being the lake effect snow, it's just like moisture picked up and it's dumped and it's heavy. And it's just,
well, you know,
it doesn't happen very often, but when it does to this extent, it's a real mess.
Yeah, of course, the other place where you have fan shoveling is in Green Bay, where the fans are shareholders and they'll happily shovel for free. So.
Yeah, and well, they're offering free tickets at Ralph Wilson Stadium if anybody. The thing is, you got to get there. You can't even get into that area, let alone get in there to help shovel. That's the curious part to me. Lots of curiosity, of course, with the National Football League, and the latest, of course, involves Adrian Peterson, who now I guess has been suspended, but suspended again, and he's gone for the season.
Yeah, first he was suspended with pay, so that was really paid leave. That's the opinion of the NFL. Now, those first 9 games, that was not really a suspension, paid leave. The NFL reserved its right to suspend Peterson once the criminal proceedings were done, and that's precisely what they've done. The NFLPA is saying, well, hang on a second here. You can call it paid leave, but it was still a suspension. It was still a 9-game suspension. Your new domestic violence policy calls for a minimum of 6 games. So why don't you just fine him for those 6 games and reinstate him? And the NFL is saying no. I mean, the bottom line is, I tweeted out earlier today on Eric on Sports Law that Roger Goodell wanted a mulligan on Ray Rice, and he got it with Adrian Peterson.
Well, I mean, to me, the union, now they fight this, do they not? They appeal to this, but I always think the National Hockey League, as soon as you appeal something, it goes right to the commissioner, and I don't think it's any different with the NFL, is it?
Yeah, I mean, in some circumstances, it goes to an independent arbitrator, but under the personal conduct policy, the appeal goes to the guy that made the decision in the first place, and that's Roger Goodell. In the case of Ray Rice, Roger Goodell did step aside when the NFLPA asked him to, and an independent arbitrator stepped in. But in that case, the reason Goodell stepped aside is because he was a witness in the Ray Rice appeal, right? Because Janae Palmer and Ray Rice told him things, so he was deposed. But in this, it's completely inappropriate for a witness to climb out of the witness box and then climb onto the judge's stand and make a decision, right? I mean, common sense says a witness doesn't make decisions. So that's why Goodell steps aside, and he was supposed to. But in this case here, he's not a witness in the Peterson case, so he's going to make that decision. So and that's why Damore Smith, the executive director or head of the NFLPA, said that litigation is, quote, inevitable. Because, you know, he doesn't expect to get what he perceives to be a fair shake. And they may take this to court and ask a judge to intervene. But the first thing they'll have to do is go through this formal appeal process, because the judge is not going to want to see him in court complaining until Roger Goodell has, in all likelihood, maintained his suspension of Adrian Peterson, you know, for a minimum of 6 games. Let's not forget, this is, you know, it could be an indefinite suspension. He has to apply for reinstatement on April 15th, 2015. And at that point, if he's showing Goodell that he's, you know, properly rehabilitated, then he'll be reinstated. You know, what I find interesting here, and this appeared in Goodell's letter yesterday, outlined the reasons why he was suspending Peterson for 6 games. And in part is he said Peterson didn't show remorse. And, you know, that to me was a bit of a surprise. I didn't think Goodell had to go there, because he could just say, look, I reserve my right to suspend you. Now I'm suspending you because you hit a 4-year-old kid and hit him too many times and too hard. You know, by saying he was remorseful, that I thought maybe was a bit of an issue, because, yeah, at the outset, AP came out and he said, look, this is how, I'm not sorry, this is how we do things. But later on, he did come out as apologetic and contrite. Has already taken parenting courses. I don't know if people know that. I interviewed a guy named Phil Mackey on my show yesterday, and he does the morning show out at ESPN 1500 in Minnesota. And Peterson has also come across, I think, as pretty contrite and apologetic. I think he's a prime candidate for rehabilitation when it comes to parenting. But I guess Goodell's biggest concern here, I guess he's got two. The first one is he wants to make sure Adrian Peterson doesn't reoffend with the same type of offense. And number two is, you have to assume he sat down with the business partners, regional sponsors, national sponsors, media partners, and asked them all, okay, if we reinstate Adrian Peterson now, what's your reaction? And I suspect a lot of them weren't too happy. So that's why you saw what you saw, another suspension, because this ultimately, guys, is a business decision and nothing else.
TSN legal analyst Eric McRamala joining us here on TSN 1290, the latest on Adrian Peterson. If we go back to the Ray Rice case, we won't reopen that. I think everybody knows what went on there. But if that doesn't happen, if that never happens, and I mean everything, never gets to be, never happened, the whole event doesn't happen, does this whole thing proceed the way it is right now with Adrian Peterson?
No, I don't think so, and I think it's a fair question to ask. Ray Rice changed everything. As a result of that, the NFL has no choice but to align itself with current sensibilities that have dramatically shifted after people saw Ray Rice's left cross in that elevator in the second video. You know, as a lawyer, I've seen domestic violence before. A lot of people haven't. That's what it looks like. It's appalling. It's horrific. And I've seen a lot worse than that. But once you see it, it changes everything. You know, from 2000 to now, there have been 89 other instances of domestic violence in the NFL, and the average suspension was 1.5 games. So now everything has changed. Everything has changed because of Ray Rice. And Adrian Peterson, I think, is bearing sort of the brunt of that. You know, from my standpoint, I said it on my show that I believe that, you know, Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson can be distinguished. Ray Rice is never going to be forgiven. Ray Rice is toxic. Ray Rice will never play in the NFL again, because any team dumb enough to sign Ray Rice is going to lose part of their fan base, and most importantly, they're going to be losing sponsorship. With Adrian Peterson, you know, what he did was wrong. But there's this added cultural layer that makes the discussion a bit more complex and a bit more nuanced. In the state of Texas, where he was raised and where this happened, there is actually legislation. It's called the Family Code. In there, it lets parents hit their kids. It lets parents hit their kids so long as they don't inflict, quote, substantial harm, which is what Adrian Peterson did. But it's a bit different. I had on my show Amani Toomer, a former wide receiver for the Giants, and I asked him, I said, you know, Amani, is Peterson is saying, you know, this is how African Americans discipline their kids. And Armani, you know, this is New York, he's telling me, yeah, actually, I hate to say it, but it's true. So it's more complicated, I think. And I think Adrian Peterson will be forgiven in Minnesota. He's known as the Purple Jesus. They love him, although he is 30. And you've got Jarek McKinnon and Asiata in the backfield. And Peterson, unless he takes a haircut on his salary, I'm told that he's not going to be playing for the Vikings again. It's less an issue of conduct and more an issue of economics.
Eric, how do you view what the NFL is doing here compared to what the actual law did in this case?
Yeah, you know, the NFL is distinguishing, and I guess they don't have a choice. I mean, you know, at law, look, you've got so many of these cases, you know, and I think that we both know that, and you can't, and there's not enough room, you know, enough room in prisons to house all these guys. So that's why you often cut deals with first-time offenders, and the goal of prison in these types of cases is rehabilitation. So if you can achieve rehabilitation outside the penal system, then all the better. You know, why put Adrian Peterson in jail for that if you're able to change him? From the NFL standpoint, though, is their position now is, all right, you know, we've got to protect and insulate, you know, our reputation and goodwill. Our revenue, you know, is sort of tied into that. And we know Goodell's goal is $25 billion in revenue, you know, in 10 to 15 years or whatever that timeline is, a very ambitious timeline. And he's got to do everything he can to preserve that. And he screwed up on Ray Rice. So as I said at the outset of this call, man, this is his mulligan. And that's why AP is getting suspended for 6 games. If no Ray Rice, AP gets a couple of games. Maybe the pictures, the photographs make it a little more complicated, so maybe it's 4 or 5 games, but that's it.
Well, and we'll see, hopefully, I mean, you say we'll see what happens next, and unfortunately there probably will be another case, and who knows what it'll entail. You'd like to think it'll never happen again, but we'll see what comes up from the National Football League if and when this happens again, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah, you know, and it's, you know, if you believe that some of the players are dabbling in different types of pharmaceuticals, which, you know, help make it more difficult to control their anger, it's more likely you'll see stuff than not, I think.
It's curious, though. It's all timing, is it not, Eric? I mean, the New York Times wrote a piece the other day about a couple of women who have left former NFL players because of allegedly abusive situations, and both of those individuals, I believe, now play in the Canadian Football League. Timing, to me, is everything. Here, going forward, you're going to see strict penalties, but there's other guys that have come long before this, even just 2 years prior to this, that really went unpunished.
Yeah, I mean, from 2000 to now, almost 90 cases of domestic violence in the NFL, and the average suspension is 1.5 games. Everything has changed, and the NFL's message is, I think, abundantly clear here, that now it's close to zero tolerance, and you're going to come down, they're going to come down really hard on you if you engage in this kind of stuff. It will happen again, I think, because just the nature of humanity and just the way that we're built, in the moment sometimes some guys lose it. And after they lose it, they're in trouble. So Dwight Howard in the NBA, I'll be interested to see what happens with him. You know, now they're looking at possible criminal charges against Dwight Howard. A doctor found that he abused his child, but child services decided not to pursue it. But now they're looking a little bit closer. Is Dwight Howard going to be put on leave? I forget the name of the player with the Charlotte. Is it the Bobcats now? I forget what it's called in Charlotte now. It's not the Bobcats anymore, is it? It's
the Hornets.
The Hornets, thank you. One of their guys, Jeffrey, you have to remind me of his last name, has also been put on indefinite leave as well because of domestic violence. So, yeah, guys, absolutely right. It's a complete game changer. This is the new normal, and players are going to have to adjust. But, you know, you have to still worry about what I call these unintended consequences. You know, if you have a former partner or lover who feels like she was let down by her, you know, boyfriend or husband, one way to fire back is to manufacture domestic violence charges and hope that those stick so the player is put on indefinite leave. Even if the player's letter exonerated, the damage is done to his reputation. So the NFL has to be careful. Every case reviewed on a case-by-case basis to ensure there is sufficient evidence to suspend the player without having the case adjudicated in the criminal courts.
The Hornets' Jeffrey Taylor is that latest one you mentioned just the other day. Always great stuff, Eric. Good to catch up with you. And, well, we'll see how this continues to spin along.
No problem, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Eric. Eric McCromella, the TSN legal analyst. We'll take the time out. Shane Nottie with his NHL news and notes up next here on the Runa Roundtable on the home of the Jets. This is TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Runa Roundtable with Rick Ralph Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
It's the Rona Roundtable here on a Wednesday on the home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. Jets skating today. It's an optional one. Pavlik's on the ice. Party! Peluso, Halaschuk, Slater, Gagliardi, Thorburn, and Klitsam. New guy. I like to call him. Not new anymore, but still new guy. They're getting ready for Detroit coming in here tomorrow night. And then, of course, the Blues are here on the weekend before the Jets head back out on the road. And hopefully the snow's gone in Buffalo by the time the Jets get there next week. Here he is now. Time for his NHL news and notes at noon. How are you? Shane Naughty.
I'm good, Rick. How are you today?
I am well. Have you ever lost a game 9-2?
I'm sure I have. I remember in junior we lost to Seattle, something like that. And Don Clark was the coach. All I remember is the next day we had to be there before school. And I remember it was a snowy day. It was probably like today. We practiced, so we're wet. And then he said, okay, leave your bottom halves on, put your runners, run, start running. And when you see my truck, turn around. So we were running out on the highway, snowy cloud, wet gear. They don't do this anymore.
Where was his truck?
He was about, I'd say, 2 miles away. So we ran there, ran back. Went back on the ice, then went to school. So that was the last time I remember a real severe loss.
Did you sleep through class?
Well, that was the norm. Yeah, that doesn't happen nowadays. There might be something against that, but that was the old school way. And yeah, that loss was not well received by our coach, and he made sure we understood.
9-2 on home ice. Randy Carlyle is speaking today, and his first words when he got there is, oh, there's some new people here, because even the news media, I think, are out. And Dave Nonis is actually going to have to speak as well to the media. But 9-2 on home ice. Put it this way. Ever been on a team that scores 9 goals and you don't have a point?
Well, that's easy to do.
The only 3 of them last night, Jokinen, Neil, and Volchenkov.
Jokinen didn't get a point.
Didn't get a point. There was 15 guys that got a point last night for the Predators, and there were 9 that got at least 2 for the Predators. But Ole didn't get a point, nor did James Neal, which is even more surprising that Neal didn't
surprising.
Get one.
Yeah. You know what? I could understand. I would be one of those guys probably without in a big game like that.
It's over the last 4 seasons, there's only been one other game in which a team has had as many as 9 players register 2 or more points, and that was the Penguins, who beat Carolina last year. And 9 Penguins had multiple point games there. Wow. Really bizarre. The Jets are not having this problem, either one, either getting blown out at home or blowing other teams out. And it's probably a better thing. But what did you make of those New Jersey Devils last night? 4 shots in the first, 5 in the second. And Michael Hutchinson, I swear, was putting together a jigsaw puzzle in the first 2 periods. I mean, that's a tough game for a goaltender.
Well, it's a real tough game for a goaltender. And, you know, that's New Jersey hockey. It's not going to be a wide-open affair. They try to lull you into that type of game, and hopefully they can make you sleepy, and then you make a mistake, and they capitalize. It's been the way they've played for years. Just now, maybe they don't have the personnel they had when they were successful. Yeah, they weren't able to get much going. The first period, I think, was really slow on both sides, in my opinion. I thought the second was a result more of the Jets got going. And then the third, well, it's a little bit of a press. So, you know what? For Winnipeg, a good job. They took advantage. They beat a team they should beat, and they got a big 2 points.
Shane, I don't know what to expect now anymore with Pomo. I don't know who he's going to put in net at any time. I suspect Pavlik will see him Thursday against the Red Wings. But what do you make of these numbers that Hutchinson's been putting up here? On the season, a 138 goals against average, save percentage of .948. And this month alone, his goals against average, I think, is sub 1. Yeah, it's .81 in the month of November. It's ridiculous.
Well, he's been really good for them, and you know what? It's a small sample, and this is where it gets interesting for me. That was his 4th start, so let's go back to after his first start against LA. I recall Peter Budaj was supposed to come up and meet Michael Hutchinson was supposed to get down, from what I heard.
We had panic
after preseason, and it was about the same sample size. So now we've seen the reverse, and he wasn't as bad as that. Is he as good as this? Maybe. But I'm willing to bet if he can keep this pace, fantastic. It's going to be great. But you know what? You just have to be patient. Things have gone his way here. He's played really well. There's going to be some bumps in the road, and it's going to go one way, and we don't know. But right now, you know, you say, I don't know what Paul Maurice will do either, and that's the reason he gets paid what he gets paid. That's the reason he's coached as many games as he has, and he's earned the right to make that decision along. And it's not just his alone. I believe, you know, it's collective. From he gets input from the assistant coaches, and more importantly from Wade Flaherty, the goaltending coach, about how they want to set it up. So you know what, they'll make the decision, and we'll sit back. We'll see who it is, and then the debate will begin.
Hutchinson wasn't overly taxed last night. In the third period, I thought he had to come up with a couple of pretty good saves there. But, I mean, the credit really, the goaltending's been great. But to me, they haven't been making these awesome saves, shall we say. There's been some pretty good saves along the way here. But a lot of credit has to go to the defense and the whole defensive zone in a one big parcel.
Well, the ability for them to sort it out now and really clear the front of the net. There's not many second or third opportunities for any teams now against the Winnipeg Jets, and they have done a good job of, you know, buying into to really settling things down and playing good in their own end when it gets chaotic. And that's what you want, the ability to sort it out for guys to know the responsibilities. And the goaltender, yeah, they're still asking them to make that save. They're going to have to fight through traffic, make that initial save, but that's all they're asking. So, you know, for Hutchinson, and you said it, Rick, that's tough. 9 shots after 40 minutes of play come in, and then he gets a squeaker by him and whatever. But after that, I thought a good job by him of settling down. Sure, there's a post, but we've seen posts at both ends, and whether that's he's because he has a good angle or it was wide, who knows. The good thing is that they found a way to win, and that's what they're doing, and their defensive zone to me is where the most dramatic change has been and the biggest buy-in for that team, and they're winning by it.
Speaking of good goaltending, Tuukka Rask last night picked up a shutout. That's the 24th of his career, and it took him 15 games to get it. And apparently, according to Elias, he's never gone more than 11 games in any previous season before he gets a shutout. And now he's, got as many shutouts as Sugar Jim Henry. Did you ever meet Sugar Jim Henry?
I did not meet Sugar Jim Henry. Did you?
No. Sounds like a sweet fella. However, hey, you knew it was coming, didn't you? Sometimes you can't see them coming. I don't. They just pop up like that.
Well, it's hard to see them through my phone.
But does that make sense to you? Like, Rask always seemed to get a shutout about every 10, 11 games into a season?
Well, he's a talented goalie. It has not been a good start to the year for Tuukka Rask, especially following up on a Vezina. But, yeah, I think when you look at the system he plays in and you look at the ability, he is a really, really talented goalie. So you'd think he'd be able to put up a donut here and there, and like you said, at least every 11 games. I wouldn't know it was that it's this is the longest, though. That seems strange.
Donuts. You've got Remus now drooling on the other side. That's nice.
Sure,
around
I
the
do.
Electrical equipment. Do you have your list with you today?
I do.
I figured, yeah, you mentioned it would be today. And well, you enjoy your day then. You're not out in the car yet, though, are you?
I am. I'm already out, and it's blowing snow. It stopped. Now it's blowing again.
Nice.
It's all good.
All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
We will, Rick.
Look forward
take
to
care.
It. There he goes. Shane Naughty out there in the blowing snow. We'll take the time out. We've got SportsCenter here at the bottom of the hour. When we come back, because we can't help ourselves, Rob Longley of the Toronto Sun is going to join us. What's going on there? Matt Fratton placed on waivers this morning. Did somebody say puke? That's the cover of the Sun this morning in Toronto. And Carlisle's had to speak. He notices there's more media than normal there. And on top of that, Dave Nonis, I guess, is there's so many requests for him, he's going to speak today. The fallout, when we come back, it's the Rona Roundtable here on the home of the Jets. This is TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Rona Roundtable with Rick Ralph Podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Wednesday edition of the Rona Roundtable here on the home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Well, digesting what took place last night in Toronto. They still are, I think. I don't think it stopped. People are still feeding on it today. The front page of the Toronto Sun this morning, did someone say puke? And from a distance, it's kind of funny. Once you get near the epicenter, I don't know that it's as funny. And Rob Longley would know that. He joins us from the Toronto Sun. How you doing?
Good, guys. How are you?
We're doing well. We were just kind of talking about the 9-2 win by Nashville because, of course, Nashville being in the Central Division, we keep an eye on all teams Central, in relation to the Winnipeg Jets. But we thought, boy, oh boy, that thing really got out of hand last night at Air Canada Centre. And it wasn't like, I saw the highlights. It wasn't like they bombarded them with 60 shots. It's just somehow things found their way into the net any way it did.
Yeah, well, as you're well aware, Rick, the Predators are a pretty good team this year, and they certainly play a little bit different under Peter Laviolette than they did under Barry Trotz. They're a more aggressive forechecking team and all that kind of stuff, and they're pretty efficient in what they do. But having said that, I don't know any team in the history of hockey that's that efficient that should be able to pump 9 goals in on a team in their own building. It was, it really was a shameful effort by the Maple Leafs, and it's unfortunate for them, but in this market, as you're well aware, when things go south like they did last night and Saturday night, there tends to be an implosion to follow, and that's certainly what we're in the middle of right now. And we had fun with it, as you alluded to in our paper, with the did somebody say puke line, because it was mainly what Brian Burke had said earlier in the day. He referred to the Toronto media as a bunch of pukes, and our paper had a little bit of fun with it, but it's certainly not a lot of fun around the team right now.
It's the next day that can even be a little more strange, can it, Rob? Because, I understand Carlisle came out to speak to the media today and immediately looked around and said, oh, there's a few new people here today. and Dave Nonis is even going to have to speak today just because people want some answers. And I don't know that there are any answers to offer up after a lone hockey game like that. Maybe you include the game against Buffalo as well. But you can end up getting some pretty bizarre questions the next day following these big blowout losses.
Yeah, it's always an awkward day, I find, there's always more media. You tend to get, more general news people, and there's nothing wrong with that, but you that lump in with the sports people and all kinds of cameras, all kinds of microphones, and really, what do you say? To me, the most difficult part for the players and for the coaching staff is, so they got humiliated by Buffalo 6-2 on Saturday night. They get blown out of their own building by Nashville 9-2 on Tuesday night. Then Wednesday morning, you got to get out of bed and go to work and prepare to Thursday night play the Tampa Bay Lightning, who may be one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. I don't know how they do it, and that's we're really going to get a sense of if there's any character at all or any spine at all with this team when they hit the ice tomorrow night. And it's not so much about winning and losing games. It's and Randy Carlisle has stressed this. It's about how they compete, and they've just been so non-competitive in these two recent losses that. Even diehard Leaf fans are getting sick of it by now.
Matt Fratton gets placed on waivers by the Leafs. So I guess that's what the big change that everybody thought was coming today?
Matt Fratton, the healthy scratch for the last 5 or 6 games, you mean? Yeah, he's been a disappointment. I think, he's probably played his way out of the NHL because he did get an opportunity in the preseason and early in the regular season and showed nothing. So it's I don't know if they made that move because they felt they had to do something, but it's certainly... That is the least of their worries right now.
Rob, what's up with the goaltending? I mean, Bernier gets the start last night, 3 goals on 12 shots. He gets saddled with the loss, even though Reimer comes in and allows 6 on 25. That's 37 shots, 9 goals. What's been up with the goaltending through all of this?
Well, it's been interesting because I thought that Jonathan Bernier would certainly take the mantle of the number one goaltender, and he'd shown signs of it in his past 2 or 3 games. And, Reimer was getting his share of ice time, and I think the reason for it was team's already had, I believe, 5 back-to-back so far, so Carlisle likes to make sure that many coaches do, split up the tandem for back-to-back. But I thought this was going to be the chance, a 3-game homestand, that Bernier would sort of take the stranglehold in this, and of course he lets in a bad goal less than 2 minutes into the game, and as you said, 3 and 12 shots, and Reimer comes in, has a decent second period, and then they pump 3 by him in the first 3 or 4 minutes of the third period, so like just about every spot on this roster right now, goaltending is again an issue. They're not pulling their end of the bargain, and I think that's a concern.
A lot of people make predictions at the start of the season, and they figure that Randy Carlisle would be the first coach removed. I think from all accounts, it doesn't sound like something's going to happen here in the next 24, 48 hours. If things continue, maybe, with a tailspin, then you might get into that kind of talk. But realistically, the thoughts on Carlisle here lasting the entire season with the Leafs?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I'm in the school of, really, why is the first thing you have to blame is the coach in this? And if you look at the efforts that this team has had in what I think now is 5 blowout losses. I mean, I don't know. Maybe coaches are supposed to motivate, and obviously they're supposed to have decent system work, but, you know, the players, to me, this is way more on the players than it is on the coaches. I think what we're seeing with Brendan Shanahan, like, he's kept pretty quiet through most of the season, actually, and he's really observing from afar. Now, at some point, I think he would like to have Carlisle finish the season no matter what, but at some point, are you bludgeoned into doing something? They have Tampa Bay here Thursday. They have Detroit here Saturday, and they're in Pittsburgh next Wednesday. Now, if they lose all 3 of those games on top of what we've seen so far, maybe Shanahan will feel that he's in a position that he's got no other choice but to get rid of Randy Carlisle.
Rob Longley of the Toronto Sun with us here on TSN 1290. Rob, I know you've made numerous trips down to Buffalo, and boy, that they do get the what they call the lake effect snow, and every now and then it really does dump on them, and that's been the case here as of late. The Buffalo Bills are looking for people that are shoveling, and we'll pay them $10 an hour, I see. But you've seen this sort of thing down around there before. How devastating is this for Buffalo in itself? I mean, the NFL might even have to make some sort of contingency plan for the Bills this weekend if they can't get the snow out of there.
Well, it's crazy, as you know, from having spent some time in this area too, and it would seem odd for a Southern Ontario person to complain about the winter weather to somebody from Winnipeg, but they really do get hit with what they call the lake effect snow there. And, you know, I've seen it at times. It's, you know, I'm sitting an hour and 15 minutes away from where that storm hit, and I've got nothing, but it just piles on, you know, when it blows in off of that lake. I imagine because the infrastructure there is so used to this kind of thing, if they don't get tons of snow over the next few days, they'll be fine. But there's issues of players even getting to practice today, from what I understand, which, you know, then the issue of competitiveness starts to come in for the NFL, and that's something that they're certainly going to be looking at over the next 48 hours or so.
Well, if it was Mel Aspin, the old mayor of the Toronto, he'd call in the Army. What about
right. The rest of Canada loved that, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, didn't they, though? But the, I mean, I wouldn't doubt that even National Guard or somebody be called in here to try and help based on how much snow is down there.
Well, literally, there's some houses that are like, you can only see the tip of the roof. But that's how much snow fell in, you know, whatever it was, a 12, 15-hour span.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it sure is.
Rob, always enjoy the visit, and we'll do this again some point along the road here.
Sounds good. Good chatting with you, Rick.
Thanks, Rob. Rob Longley of the Toronto Sun. We'll take the time out. We're back with more, including head coach of the Winnipeg Jets, Paul Maurice, on the Rona Roundtable, right here on the home of the Winnipeg Jets. This is TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Rona Roundtable with Rick Ralph Podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Optional practice today for the Winnipeg Jets, and a game tomorrow against the Detroit Red Wings. We'll hear from Coach Paul Maurice here in a couple of minutes. Pascal Dupuis, the Pittsburgh Penguins have announced, has a blood clot in his lung. So he is gone for the season. And we'll all recall from Paul Postma going through the blood clot, and that takes a while to come back. So tough blow for the Pittsburgh Penguins, who have had some strange, well, different injuries, not just like twisted ankles or injuries that you hear every day in the National Hockey League. These are different. And Pascal Dupuis with a blood clot in his lung, out 6 months, and so the team will miss him. We've got a pair of tickets to see Theory of a Dead Man. They are appearing tomorrow at Burton Cummings Theater. And first caller through right now at 204-780-1290. We can help you out. If you are free on Thursday night to go to the Burt, then we've got a pair of tickets for you. Theory of a Dead Man, 204-780-1290. First caller through gets that. And let's get the latest from the optional skate today for the Winnipeg Jets. Here's Jets coach Paul Maurice.
Paul, big picture, you're at the quarter point of the season. You look at the standings this morning, you're a playoff team. How do you assess where your club is at right now?
We've got the very early stages of a good foundation and a good understanding of things that we can do on a nightly basis, things we can replicate. And a real strong, especially over the last 10 games, regardless of the wins or losses of those games. I think a good commitment through the group, throughout the whole lineup, to do those things. So we don't have any outliers, anybody that's trying to play the game any differently. So a positive start.
Has this group exceeded at all what you thought they may be able to do?
I think no. I think that you're hopeful that you can get to that, get closer to your team identity. I think we're on page with that. There's lots of good in our game. There's things that we really believe we can get better at just through repetition more than anything else. So I think we're right where we could be.
Last night, I think you called the start decent. Was the word you used?
Yeah.
Does that mean you think you can improve on that?
Sure. And I got a little longer term perspective on maybe what we're trying to do. I know it's going to take some time. So we're early stages in a bunch of things: how we generate offense, and how we generate offense and still be a good, reliable hockey team. So. Yeah, there's lots of areas of our game that I think will get better. I'm just not sure they're going to get better in a week or two. You know, this is a longer-term thing. And for our defensive play that we have some confidence in now, it's done over months, you know, and years, really, till that is the thought process becomes an instinct or maybe better yet, a habit. But the best part of our game, even going back to last year right now, is to compete. That's the one area that I've been most pleased with, is how hard they work. And, you know, you go back and I look at that Nashville loss and look at the compete level of the team, how hard they played shift after shift. That's what I'm most pleased with. And that doesn't have anything to do with the coach. It has to do with the men that are here.
How tough would you be to beat with even a decent, timely power play right now?
Well, you have to be careful what you wish for, right? Certainly, there's an area. The interesting part about it is it's never as bad as it seems, and it's never as good as it feels sometimes, but I think we're fourth in the league for shots on goal on our power play. So it's a little bit like the five-on-five offensive game. The puck's getting to the net. What we need to work on and develop is, you know, how we're getting those pucks to the net and where we're positioned off those shots. So our last two games, our power play hasn't been good. It hasn't looked good for the most part. Prior to that, the pucks are getting to the net. I mean, we're right up there with the best teams in the leagues and delivering the puck to the net. So it's for me, that's the same things that we've been talking about 5-on-5. Shots are fine, but how are they getting there? What's the traffic look like? What's the response to the rebound? So those are the areas that we can improve.
You're also leading the league in penalties pretty much.
Yeah.
Now, is that sapping your offense, or is that a byproduct of a more physical game?
I haven't felt it sapped the offense yet. because we've had success on it, there's no emotional drain on our penalties, you know. So we've been, our PK is, I think, -5. I think we've given up 7 or 8, -6 now after last night, but we've scored 2. So it's a pretty effective group. So there's no negative energy coming off our PK. As far as the penalties that we take, there's certain ones we just don't like, and we work hard at not taking those stick infractions. Some of the other ones are a little bit of a byproduct of compete, so I'm not as worried about that.
As an assistant captain, what role has Blake Wheeler played in bringing your team together this year?
Well, I don't know what goes on in the room for the most part, so we'll just talk about what he does on the ice, and his practice habits are just fantastic. His conditioning coming into the summer, his testing was just off the charts, and you see it in the games. He is in the Mark Stewart mold of every shift as a competition. He's been just fantastic in how he drives practice and how he drives our pace in games. I've really, you know, you know players a little bit from the outside looking in, but, you know, right from the time, my experience with Blake has been he's just an exceptionally competitive man on the ice and very driven for the team. You know, the stats are, I feel with him, more secondary. He wants to score. He feels that pressure to score, for sure. But he's never upset after a win, you know, if he didn't get a puck to the net or not. But he's been just a real solid man in our room.
How about the challenge that is Detroit coming off their big win last night?
They're a good hockey club. You know, you look at their regulation losses, but more importantly, go back and look at their schedule, the competition. You know, they started with the games against Boston. They played good teams in this league and had some success. There's a perfect example of the team that's personnel changes, but they're so far along in their program and watch the puck battles. They're good and hard on pucks and short little area plays. Yeah, it's quite a challenge, but you know, we're playing as strongly, I think, right now as we have this year, so it'll be a good challenge for us.
Paul, you back to power play for a sec. You mentioned last night about the mindset. What has to change there? What does that mean?
Well, confidence is everything, right, in all walks of life, and it's not an overly confident group right now. You can't have your power play taken away from your 5-on-5 game, and two of the best chances that we gave up life last night were right after a power play because there's that frustration building. Again, what has to change, I think, is how we're delivering the puck to the net. We're getting it to the net. So you're the standard coach's line, we've got to shoot the puck more. For us, our shot attempts were over 200 on our power plays, just slightly over 50% are actually getting to the net. We're missing the net. We get an awful lot blocked. So how we're getting to the puck's got to change a little bit. But all that, we're talking about a half foot in just about everything that you do out there. It's the quickness that comes from it. Part of it's confidence, part of it's an intensity level. And then a big part of it is the timing and the structure of it. We've really fallen off, I thought, in the last two games with that, the structure of it. You know, a shot gets to the net, somebody's 2 feet off the post instead of being in the front. But that's what we'll work on.
And you may have answered it just by what you said, but I'm wondering about the shooting percentage for the team. Pretty low, and it doesn't seem like it would stay there. But do you see how it can come up?
Beats back to the norm at some point. We're just waiting for that reversion to happen. Hasn't been as much offense in the last three games, as much a function of who you're playing. You know, that game in Nashville, chances were 7-5. So we'll take that over Nashville's game last night. We liked, again, the last three games block is not a great indicator of the offensive part of the game, but prior to that, we've liked a lot of the offense that we've got and had people in alone. And so there is that expectation. The pucks will start going on that for these guys. And while they're not, you have to find a ways to win games.
And what about last night's goals? If you look at last night's goals, you see those as the kind of goals that you want your guys
to...
Back.
So we've scored 6 in our last 4 periods of hockey. Rebounds, deflections, pucks at the net. Pucks at the net from strange areas. So, but we're not advocating you throw absolutely everything at the net. But clearly, there needs to be a couple of... the quickness to the decision. So Froh going into the middle of the ice on the second goal. When he's going into the middle, he's not slowing down to find a passing lane. He's going in the middle to find a shooting hole. Two guys going to the net. So that is something that we've looked at.
So Evander's goal line slapper is not necessarily what you're...
No, but you know what? Goal scorers score those, right? Like you... And I'm not talking about our fourth line, but any fourth guy in the league can fire 7,000 of those in the net. Yeah. And it's never, ever going in. Guys who score goals find a way to score goals like that.
Are your lines staying the same for the next game?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll start that way.
Paul Maurice, they'll start that way anyway, the Lions. They had some success last night. Hope to try and carry that over against the Detroit Red Wings tomorrow night. And, of course, we'll have that game for you here on TSN 1290. So there's the latest from the Winnipeg Jets, who held the optional skate this morning. Meanwhile, from the Bombers, they've been busy as of late. Zach Anderson signing today. It's a 2-year deal. And Darren Bombing of TSN 1290 just caught up with Paris Cotton, who was inked the other day to a 2-year deal as well.
I'm here with Paris Cotton, fresh off signing a new 2-year contract extension with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Paris, you finished the regular season pretty hot for the Blue Bombers. You had 4 starts to finish the season, nearly 350 yards, 3 touchdowns. You had back-to-back 100-yard games, well over 6 yards a carry as well. What do you feel you can accomplish if given a full season?
I just think the sky's the limit. I'm just going to prepare this offseason to have my best season next year.
During locker cleanup this year, our last chance to talk to you while you were still in Winnipeg, about the camaraderie in the room, and you spoke about the culture that the organization is kind of building. You joined this team after trying out during the Florida minicamp back in April. When you arrived in Winnipeg, what did you see in the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and what they were trying to build?
I've seen a collection of men that wanted to win, and I'm always down to win a football game, and I think we all taken the attitude of our coach and our staff, and I think it's going to reflect a lot better in our season schedule next year.
there was a point in this season where the team placed you on the practice roster. You and your agent were maybe looking for opportunities with other CFL clubs. Did you ever think that maybe this day would come, that, you know, you'd almost go full circle and this team would commit to you for 2 years?
I mean, I honestly just didn't know. I just tried to take a day at a time pretty much and just prepare. I told myself I'll prepare like a starter. So when my time came, I can perform like a starter. And I think just my patience was taking, something good happening, just paid off.
Your own personal performance aside, let's talk a little bit about the team. What do you think the team as a whole can accomplish next year with Mike O'Shea with a year under his belt and you yourself with a year of CFL experience under your belt?
I think we showed a lot of good things to build on from last year. We lost a lot of close games, and we won a lot of close games. I think that just brought us close in, and it's going to help us learn how to win next year. And I think it's just we have a lot to build off of, and I'm looking forward to it, honestly.
This is great, Paris. Really appreciate it, and enjoy the weather down in Miami. We'll see you back in springtime.
All right.
Thanks for this.
So there's two of the pending free agents back with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers next season in Zach Anderson and now Paris Cotton, or shall we say it the other way around, because Cotton got the deal first. Either way, both of them have got deals. How about this deal for you? First caller through right now gets a six-pack of day passes to watch DeKalb Super Spiel. Curling this Thursday through Monday in Morris and Friday and Saturday in Rose North, plus a copy of Weezer's latest, Everything Will Be All Right in the End, in honor of the Maple Leafs and their 9-2 loss to the Predators. Tomorrow, it is Detroit, and we're back down to MTS Center right here on the home of the Jets. This is TSN 1290.
You've been listening to The Rona Roundtable with Rick Ralph. Podcast. Catch The Rona Roundtable with Rick Ralph live weekdays at 11 a.m. on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.